Hi, everyone. Welcome to Finding You in Evoke Therapy podcast. Today, we have the privilege of hearing from a friend of Evoke, from a parent who has served as a mentor, who is a wonderful example of the heroic journey inward to do their own work. And today, Meredith Bluestein is here to share with us some nuggets and some wisdom from her journey. So I'm very pleased to welcome Meredith to the program. Welcome to the program today, Meredith.
Thank you so much for having me, Brad.
To begin with, I think probably the place to begin is to start with your journey, why we're talking here today, why it's important for you to talk here today, and kind of what led you to this point in your life where we're talking to each other on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm here to talk about parenting in maybe ways that you haven't thought of before. And these ways I've learned about in my own therapy. I've learned about from reading your books. And I've learned about from doing the work with my kids on a regular basis. And I've learned about from listening to the podcast. And I've also learned about from practicing all of this in my own life. And I do want to say that our kids are not a way to be fixed. And change is necessary and possible for parents. I am managing to be a good mother without properly being mothered and fathered myself. Mm. We aren't born to do this. Mm-hmm. We become. And I think there's a lot to gain on this journey, the journey of your kid showing you signs that something's not right, and your child being the identified patient in the family and needing the help. But really, I think that we are all identified families and really embracing that concept.
Before we get into some of the points that we're going to talk about today and have you discuss, I want to ask you, was there a moment or maybe it was a series of moments or I don't know what it was, where you made that shift? You talk about that our children are not a way to be fixed. They're not sent away to be fixed. And you talk about a lot. I've read your posting. You and I have talked before. We've met at parent meetings. You've made this shift to talking about your own work. Was there something or a moment or an idea where you made that shift from it's my child's issue and I'm here to support him getting fixed to I have some work to do that's a part of this bigger picture?
I think a moment in our journey that describes that is when my husband and I flew down to pick up my son from his wilderness program, and we were driving him out west to go to a therapeutic boarding school. And we got in the car after his wilderness graduation. And my husband and I started the ways that we were arguing to get to the airport. And I was saying we should stop for food. And he was saying, where is that going to be? And we did this back and forth, this little dance that we did about a little bickering, which felt comfortable and familiar to us. And I glance back in the back seat, and there's Owen, fresh out of wilderness, and his head is in his hands. And I said, what's up, buddy? Are you okay? Uh-huh. And he said, I learned in wilderness that I don't have an anger problem. I have an anxiety problem. And the way that you guys are speaking to each other right now is making me really anxious. So can you figure out how to get to the airport like right now without speaking to each other that way? Mm-hmm. And that was one of the first signs that it hit me that Owen had done such beautiful work out in the woods. He had read The Knight in Rusty Armor. He had peeled away those layers. He had learned some self-awareness and some accountability and some responsibility. He had allowed his really beautiful traits to come out of hibernation and become a little bit more vulnerable. And he also had this voice that he was able to use in this calm way. And that's when I realized the first time, oh, he's done some changing. And we now really need to look at ourselves and we need to do some catch up, because recovery does not happen in a vacuum. And a family is a system. And that was an awakening for us.
That's a beautiful, simple, but beautiful story. And I'm glad for him. And I'm glad that he could signal that to you guys. I want to ask the next question, which is kind of a two-part question. I was going to ask you why the work is so important. But before we even get to that second part of the question, a lot of people ask me, and I imagine they probably ask you, because you're such a mentor to others. You share your story with so many other people, and you're teaching people. The first part of the question really is, what do we mean? What do you mean when you say the work? And then the second part is, why is it so important? But somebody comes up to you and says, Meredith, what you keep talking about doing your work, doing the work. What is the work?
Yeah, I think that the work means that realizing that we live in default mode and we repeat psychological patterns, and our parents repeated psychological patterns. So in order to raise our kids, we really need to re-raise ourselves. Mm. And that means going into therapy and figuring out who you are and how to be clear about who you are. Because if you can't have a really good grasp about who you are as a self and what you're feeling and what your limits are, then I think it's really difficult to sit with your kids' overwhelming big feelings if you can't even sit with your own.
Right.
And when I first went to my therapist and I said to her, when my son was having a lot of problems and I felt very lost and it was affecting my marriage and it was affecting how I was mothering my two daughters. And I said to her, I feel like my manual got lost in the mail. I have no idea what I'm doing. And why does it seem like other parents sort of know how to do this? And she said to me that your parenting handbook is inside of you. And it's the experience of you making sense of your childhood and not doing it with blame or judgment, but just going through it. And we will go through it together. And it's almost like we're going to put this big puzzle on the table, a 5,000-piece puzzle. And every time you come in, we'll talk about the happy things and the traumatic things, the sad things, the confusing things. And we'll get a sense. There'll be groupings of things. And we'll get a sense of how you are the person you are today. But it's really how you're going to be able to digest the past. And that's the way forward. And I thought that really made a lot of sense to me.
Right. Well, first of all, and I'm being very, very serious, I want the name of your therapist after this. So, because I get a lot of questions for therapists who understand what it means to really do this work. So I appreciate her perspective, her wisdom. The second part of the question is, why is the work, why is that kind of work important? What does it have to do with the child? What's the impact on the child of you doing that kind of work and unraveling your own childhood?
I think it creates this, what you've talked about before, it creates this parental and emotional bandwidth, which to me is like this muscle. Mm. So if you can work on not taking things personally and not feeding into the fantasy of who you think your child should be and sort of being in the moment with your kids, I think you give them room to be active participants in their own childhood and helping them become the experts in themselves. Because ultimately, we are not the experts about who they are. We see our children very clearly, but through a parental lens. So that lens is clouded with our own stuff. And our goal is to make them as self-aware and accountable about who they are.
Hmm. Can I ask this question too, which is, therapy, what else have you done that's been a part of your work besides going to what sounds like to be a very wonderful therapist? what other kinds of tools are there for you that are out there for people that can help them get into and understand what their work is and do it?
That's a pretty long list, I have to say. I think that it's part, you know, I think of it, and for my kids too, it's sort of like a pie, and each slice is something that comes together to form this bigger picture, and everything is important because there's not one thing that's going to be that panacea. Right. I think the therapy is extremely important, but I also think that having like-minded, compassionate friends who are going to come from an authentic place and who know either from their own experiences or can really empathize what I'm going through. So I think that there's parental support, there's therapy, there is getting outside with my dogs and taking a walk every day. I think there's a basic self-care regimen that you can do, but I also think that there's other things like finding hobbies, finding meaning. I'm always trying to find and learn and grow and find parenting metaphors in everything that I do, whether I see a Broadway show, whether I see a movie. There could be one line in a movie and I really can write that down and marinate with it, a book that I'm reading. I always try to learn as I'm going along. I think it's feeling and taking the time to really get to know yourself. And some of that has also been things that are very uncomfortable to me, like taking a class. I'm taking a writing class right now. It's a fiction writing class. I was pretty nervous to take it, but I know that that's a clue to me that if there's something that is a little scary to me in a way that I'm afraid of, I know that that's probably something that I need to do and try.
Right.
And to stretch myself, to get out of my comfort zone. I think there's also a lot of somatic work that I've done in terms of sometimes it's been yoga, it's been Alexander technique, it's been Tai Chi. There's other things that I've done to sort of try and process some of the trauma and stress that comes along with parenting, I think is really also important.
I mean, this is just more of a comment than a question, but it sounds like you have embodied and embraced the idea that we talk about a lot, which is to make your life and your serenity your project. And so all the things that you're describing are just various ways that you're taking care of yourself. And that's something that comes through in your answer, that doesn't have to be one thing. And it's really a limitless number of things, but that you're making your meaning of your life, your serenity, your well-being, your project, instead of course, depending upon and handing it over to your child. Does that resonate with you, that idea?
I feel very strongly about that. I feel like you're the own hero in your journey. Your kid is not the hero in your journey. Mm. Your kid is the hero in their own journey.
I love that. I have a question that comes out of what you were saying earlier when you talked about surrounding yourself with like-minded friends who are authentic. I was wondering, and I don't know if you even want to answer this or not, but have you lost friendships or relationships? Have people drifted out of your life? I'm not talking about an acute conflict that you had with somebody or an argument. I'm talking about, have you naturally let go of some old relationships because people weren't able to meet you in that place of authenticity and where you and your family were struggling in so much pain with the kind of support that you need? Have relationships drifted apart or changed in that way?
I think that's a two-part answer. Okay. I think that the first thing I would that comes to mind is that, what are my priorities? And where am I going to put my energy into? And my energy has to go into knowing myself. It has to go into my marriage and making that a priority. And it has to go into knowing my kids and helping them know themselves. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's the first part of that is priorities. Another thing is, I actually took a survey at the therapeutic boarding school that my son went to for 2 years. And I sent out to 50 parents a bunch of questions. And the number one answer I got back from people was what has gotten them through the whole process is having other parents to talk to and who didn't judge them. And so I thought that was just astounding. I thought it was amazing. And through my own work, I did start to realize what do friendships mean to me and what is a good friendship? And so there are some friendships that got lost along the way only because I really had to take a really good, long, hard look in the mirror to say, I think I was giving myself away in friendships and that was something I had to become, I had to come to terms with, and that what were my priorities in life and what is a friend and what do I need a friend to be? Mm-hmm. And so that was sort of something that I had to work on.
Hmm. I love it. I love how complete the overhaul, the reorientation goes in this work. Let's get into some of the specifics, some of the concepts that I know you talk about. Let's talk about letting go. Talk about what is letting go and what does it look like? Because again, it's another one of those phrases, terms that people hear a lot that they might not have a sense of. So how would you explain letting go to folks?
So this has been a very long process to even call what I do letting go. And I guess it is a form of like conscious parenting. And the main backbone of that is letting go. Because the first thing letting go means to me is it's letting go of the fantasy about your child, about who you think they are as a person, about the enamored feelings that we feel about their strengths, about who we think that they should be and what career they should have and what college they attend. And it's more, parenting is more being and less doing to me. But letting go is not passive. It is such hard work. It takes a lot of time because basically what we're doing is we're reprogramming our brains. And we're finding new ways to communicate with our kids. It's exercising restraint. And I've learned a lot from the podcast from you. It's really just learning how to sit and listen. And that is such hard work. It's not fixing their problems. It's not giving advice. It is just listening and learning how to sit with it. And a dad in a support group once used this phrase, and I love it. It's detach with love. Mm-hmm. And it's just being able to sit there with your kid and not get on their emotional roller coaster and just sort of sit there and allow them to sort of feel what they're feeling and honor that, really. I think there's a big piece in letting go of honoring that. And I think that a good example of this would be when my son was interviewing for schools after he graduated from his program. And we set him up with someone who was going to help him figure out what schools were going to be appropriate, but also how to apply. And he wanted no part of it. And he was angry about it. And he didn't feel like he was telling us off, and he was just not wanting to participate in the whole process. And I got really down about it. And my husband said, we cannot want something for him more than he wants it for himself. And that was an awakening for me. And I remember just thinking about that at the time and just feeling so overwhelmed because it was such a relief that I didn't have to force him to do anything and I didn't have to make anything happen, that this was up to him. And I had a sort of allow that accountability and responsibility play out.
Something that comes up for me when you're talking about the lessons, have there been lessons in the self-help or therapy world or therapeutic programming world? Have there been messages that you have felt judged by or that were toxic or not helpful in this process? You don't have to go into all of the details, but I'm wondering if you've had to battle at times as you've been seeking for help, if you've received some harmful or discouraging messages from folks that you're seeking help from?
I think you have to put blinders on, and I think you have to really keep asking yourself questions. I think questions are so important. Uh-huh. Does this feel right to me? Am I really listening to my kid? Uh-huh. What is this about? I think that triggers, like, this is what I've learned recently, which is I've known this for a while, but I put it into words, which is nobody triggers you. You allow yourself to be triggered. And so I think that if something does trigger me, that's grist for the mill. Why is this triggering me? What is this about? I just look at everything that you can learn about that.
Mm. Yes, it's that idea of curiosity, right? If you can develop and maintain a curious posture toward things, they can become lessons instead of barriers for you. And so I think that's kind of what you're describing. At least that's what I'm hearing.
A friend of mine said recently, I love talking to you because there was a few of us together on a text chain. And one of them was saying, I love that no one judges me in this group. And my first thought was, we get so down on ourselves when we judge. And that's, you're judging yourself for judging.
Right.
So it's a double-edged sword. But it's not that how can I explain this? I feel that we're going to judge. We're human. That's sometimes what we do, especially if you sort of grew up in a household that was extremely critical. That's like a default mode that runs in your head. It may be quieter and loses its power over time, but that voice may show up again. And it does. Sometimes there's certain voices that show up for me, but through therapy, I'm able to say, oh, hello, here you are again, that voice. But because I've sort of made friends with it, it loses its power. But anything that I'm judging, in quotes, anything that triggers me in any way, I just say to myself, well, that's just it's a projection of my own stuff. So what about that is bothering me? Because it doesn't end up being about the person. It really ends up being about something within myself.
Right. Speaking of some of those things that get triggered in us, talk about your journey as it relates to guilt and shame, what you've learned about guilt and shame in your life and in your family.
So there's a great quote that I love to think about when I think about guilt and shame in parenting. And it's by the poet Maggie Nelson. And it is idle to fault a net for having holes. Mm. And I think that compassion for yourself can really help. We're human, we're raised by humans, and we're raising humans. And so I think you have to grieve for the child that doesn't exist, and for that family that doesn't exist, and for the parent that you now have to be. I think this is just, it's very, very difficult to be on this path with kids with mental health struggles. And I think that it's difficult to be a parent in general, especially nowadays. I just read about a school district in Las Vegas who had 18 suicides this year. I read that 2 days ago. It really disturbed me. And I think that you have to feel the guilt and shame. And then I think you need to lead with curiosity and work through some of that guilt and shame. But they don't always have to be in the forefront, because I do think that they serve as roadblocks to the work that needs to be done. And I think that the more attention that you pay to the guilt and shame, I think it's like Miracle-Grow. They just will be stronger and stronger. And I think it prevents a lot of the work from being done. And, you know, I used this example recently when I was talking to parents about driving a car. You are in the driver's seat. And putting catastrophizing and devastation in the trunk, and putting sadness and guilt in the back seat, and having curiosity ride shotgun. And then everything in front of you is information. And if you can do that, I think it can be really helpful. You don't have to drop guilt and shame off at the nearest corner. It's going to be with you. It's going to sit with you. It's not going to go anywhere. But not paying attention to it on a regular basis, I think can be really helpful with some of this work.
Nice. I think a lot of people imagine that guilt and shame will eventually just go away and they'll be going down the road without it. But it's not my experience yet that we can lose it. You know, that it follows us wherever we go. I've learned that it follows me wherever I go, and I have to deal with it and do battle with it and work through it. Meredith, I mean, this is one of the obvious questions in talking to you. I've known you for a few years now, working together and seeing you online, hearing what you share, what you write. The question is, why so much passion? Like, what is it that this work fuels you so much so that you want to look for opportunities to share and to teach parents who are new to the process? Can you talk about where that passion comes from?
That's a great question. I'm not really sure. I think that I was pushed to figure myself out. And in the process, I realized that through writing a lot and talking to people, I just got very inspired. And when I tell people parenting is my passion, it does sound a little funny. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I'm like everybody else. I make a million mistakes. I micromanage my kids sometimes. I do all of the things that sometimes I'm saying that this is what we should strive for. I fail on a regular basis. It's ask my kids. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure. I think that I started to realize that my past and my present, where's the common thread, and how am I growing into the person that I am? And I just really immersed myself when my son started to have a lot of problems. I really just immersed myself into the neurobiological piece and the shame and the guilt and the all the diagnoses and what the neuropsych was about. And I kind of looked at it like this, just this big mystery, and that I dove into it. And I was lucky to have the time and some of the resources to be able to do that. And I just took the ball and ran with it. And I felt like my family really needed a leader to figure some of this stuff out. And it was sort of up to me, and I sort of just took the ball and ran with it.
I mean, it's we are better for it. I think I know the parents that you work with are better for it. So I'm grateful. It feels like it's a calling to you. You know, Joseph Campbell says the call is something you cannot not do, and that's what it sounds like when you're describing your experience.
I think it's the hardest job in the world, and. Yeah. I think that I owe it to my kids to help them grow up. I think growing up is a very hard thing to do.
So I've heard you talk about pride in somewhat of an unconventional way. So tell us about your perspectives around pride.
Well, really my wish is to extract pride from parenting and see where that gets us. Because I think that if pride showed up in the embodiment of a human being, I think pride would be a little upset, because I think she would feel like maybe she wrecked parenting a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think that when I look up the definition of pride, the first piece of it is that you're proud for yourself. And then the second piece of it is that you're proud for somebody else. And I have some problems with that, especially with kids who really need to learn a certain amount of accountability and responsibility. And that piece is very, very important. I think it's important for all kids. I think that when we get so proud of our kids, and this developed after my son came home, I think I don't say I'm proud of my kids anymore. I say I'm in awe of you. I'm so happy for you. I'm inspired by you. But I really think the definition of pride is very personal and only can be applied to the person whose accomplishment it is. Because when we are proud of somebody, pride I'm equating with ownership. And right. if we're taking away a little bit of the accomplishment by claiming it, by saying that we're proud, because I think that it's very confusing for kids to figure out what kind of achievements and accomplishments they want for themselves that don't have anything to do with what we want for them. So that's where I'm coming from on that.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I talk about that I don't know how to put it into words. And that was a very eloquent way of describing kind of the dilemma that I feel with that word. It's not one of my hard and fast rules that I tell everybody not to do, but it's definitely, I have some of the same feelings about it that you're describing as you talk about it.
I wrote an essay once about when my daughter got into college that everybody was congratulating me. And it was very, I sort of felt like I had to prove a point because I kept saying to everybody, I'll tell her this doesn't have anything to do with me. And people were so thrown off by that.
Right.
They were like, this is your accomplishment too. And this was a few years ago, but I didn't want to own her accomplishment. This was something that she did. And I felt pretty strongly about it.
I love it. I think one of the challenges, Meredith, that I find with parents is they struggle so much to own their own mistakes. And I know that's something you've already talked about. So how do you model? How do you teach? How have you learned to own your own mistakes and not let it compromise your authority and not let it compromise your parenting?
You know, I learned from my therapist about the rupture in the relationship that happens on a regular basis and then the repair, and that the repair part is just so important. And that part, it really matters. And we expect our kids to be able to be taught accountability, but yet we're not always modeling it. So I love in one of your podcasts how you were talking about just saying to your kid, I'm sorry and I'm an idiot and I did that, and they were taken aback by that. Yeah. And I started to do that with my own kids. If I was maybe snapping at them or not letting them speak or whatever it was, whatever quote unquote mistakes I was making, and I would go into them and I would say, I'm sorry I spoke to you that way. And it wasn't, I'm sorry I spoke to you that way, but, and then putting it back on them. It was really modeling the apology and owning it. And it felt very freeing to do that. And I started feeling like that was an important thing that had to be integrated in our house on a regular basis, that when we messed up, that we apologized for it without making excuses for it.
I'm assuming something, but I'll check it out with you, that you entered this work or were kind of invited into this work because you had a child that was struggling with some mental health issues. But I'm suspecting from what you're describing that it's had a global impact on your life, your marriage. How has it affected your marriage, other people in your family, your relationship with them, even your family of origin? How has this impacted you outside of just the challenging task of raising and supporting a child who's struggling with mental health?
So I think on this journey, you're learning how to deal with your, and I'm going to put this in quotes, your difficult child. But really on this journey as a parent, it's an opportunity for you to deal with all of the difficult people in your life. And that's also in quotes. Because this really is an opportunity. I've always looked at it like an opportunity. How has it changed? I'm just more clear about not feeling obligated. I'm more clear in how I can have a healthy communication with someone. Conflict resolution all the work that I've done with my son has helped me just be more clear with how I'm communicating with all of the people in my life and how I want to be treated. And with my husband and in our marriage, I think that's been sort of the most important work aside from the work with our kids. I think that's been probably the most important work because we need to be these leaders in our family and moving our family forward and moving our family along. And if we're not strong and clear about where our lines are and what we're modeling to our kids, then what's it all for? Mm-hmm. I don't even know if that I'm not sure if that makes any sense, but I think that, you know, I think it's just helped me with my boundaries and knowing what I need to do and what's good for me and what's good for my kids and what's good for my family without feeling a sense of obligation and just moving forward with a sense of responsibility and doing what I can do and not feeling like I need to do something for somebody else because that's what they expect.
I know your husband. I know he believes in this work also. And what I don't know, maybe it's not fair to ask, is was it something you had to kind of pull him into? Was it, you know, did he come into it pretty willingly of his own, in it, with his own energy? I'm curious about that because I know a lot of parents, mothers mostly, will lament the fact that sometimes they don't have a partner that's supportive of this work, that does their own work, and that is very begrudgingly going through this process. So I don't know if that's a fair question to ask, but I was just curious if you had any thoughts from your experience about that.
You know, he dove right in. I think that a lot of times he wasn't always listening to every podcast, and he still doesn't, and he doesn't read all of the books. But what I do is I'll read something or I'll listen to something, and I'll just kind of feed him the information, and I'll say, listen to this. This is super powerful. And he dove right into it from the very beginning because he knew that it was extremely important for him to, as my son's father, to pay attention and to figure out what he needed to do to help the situation.
Yeah, I miss the times and look forward to, again, the times when we get to meet in person, when I get to come to New York and meet with our great group of parents out there. But I'm always just, I have so much respect for the men that show up because there's so much in our culture. We talk about messages about and towards women, but there's messages about towards men that are really toxic and harmful. And one of them is to need help, to seek out any kind of therapeutic support is shameful. It's a unacceptable. It's not acceptable in society's ideas of the masculine. So I have been grateful to work with him, to see him show up, and very, very grateful for the fact that he and many other men are equally yoked with their partners and knowing the importance of this work.
I agree with you. And I also think that everyone can learn how to become a better parent. And everybody has sort of things they need to undo of how they grew up and what their relationship with was like with their parents and unwind some of that stuff. I think that for dads in particular, they think that they have to be stoic and they have to be extremely strong. And I think that that's counterintuitive to this whole process.
Yeah. At this point during the interview, Meredith's son, Owen, wanted to pay us a visit and say hi. And he allowed me to ask him one question and have it on the podcast for our listeners. I just want to say hello, Owen, and welcome. And I do have one question for you. My question is, have you noticed your parents doing work? Have you noticed that they are doing their work? And if so, how does that make a difference in a child's life when a parent is taking on the responsibility of doing their own work?
Yeah, I see my parents doing work. You know, ever since I you know, they made the big decision. I did a lot of the heavy work, but behind the scenes, you know, they were doing their thing, I guess. You know, getting my siblings into therapy programs, funding me to go through, first of all, your programs and other programs, and then some like transitional stuff. So they've really been there all along the way, and doing their work. And how does that play a part? Well, I think it's a really huge part, because if the parents if they're not active in the child's development, then the child will just keep pushing back and pushing back. And if there's nothing to push back into that the parent has worked on to enforce, like parenting skills and rules that are important to help a child like grow and develop, then that child doesn't have that. And when they come back from these programs, they're not going to have any, they're going to think they're all that. And they need the structure. And if the parent provides the structure, then there's success. And if there's not, then there's not going to be.
Well, congratulations on all your hard work, Owen. I know it's a lot of work that you've done. Meredith, turning back to you, can you speak to what you've learned about neurobiology, about testing, and about how that can lay out a clear roadmap for those of us who have children that are struggling and give us some direction about helping them?
I've gotten so interested in the neurobiological piece, like that just the fact I'm much more relaxed now speaking to you than I was in the beginning. So like as I'm more relaxed and I'm not sort of feeling flooded and that if you and I are connecting, that I find it fascinating that our brains would sort of be in sync and that so much of parenting is sort of like we're trying to connect with our kids. And without that real attunement, you can't connect with others. And I'm fascinated by how the body sort of gets into sync like that. I find that fascinating.
Right. I think I've been thinking about this so much the last several years that if you were to simplify it down, it really is about our nervous system and how our nervous system is upregulated and responding. And so much can be understood in terms of the alertness of our nervous system. And like you said, connection downregulates it and connection calms it. And when we are feeling unsafe, we lose capacities to be creative, to kind of think clearly through the process. So I can totally relate to that. And I think that's an important part. Was there something in particular that neuroscientifically, was it a Daniel Siegel book? Was it just being exposed to it in general in this process? What has been the biggest kind of help for you in kind of learning about how brains work, how your brain works, and how it affects you?
Well, when Owen came home, I read The Power of Different by Dr. Gail Saltz because I felt that all three of my kids sort of fall into that category of being asynchronous, of having these really amazing strengths, but also having these deficits. And so that whole theory really fascinated me. And then that led me to take a class on ADHD, which I learned so much about. I just really, I ate that up. I thought it was totally fascinating. I thought I understood what ADHD was. I actually wrote up this big, huge thing for CG parents about it because, you know, children want to do well if they can. And kids with brain differences, they're fighting a losing battle if we're expecting these if we have such high expectations for how they should behave, and we're not even giving them the tools to understand how their brains work and what they need to do to be successful. And so I just became extremely fascinated about how a brain fires up and how interest needs to be a part of that and how the basis of emotional of the executive function is emotional regulation. And that and that a great definition of executive function is when you're able to follow through and finish a task to complete a goal, how you have to regulate your behavior and your emotional state to get there. And there's just so much in that, I think. And if we can help our kids understand how their brains work, I think that is the most empowering thing that you can really do for a kid. Because there is no such thing as a normal brain. And everybody has deficits and strengths. And I think that if we can teach our kids to lead the way with their strengths and what strategies do they need to do to help with their deficits, I think that's really important because they're going to have to advocate for themselves in life. We're not going to be advocating for them for their entire lives.
Right, right.
I find that really super fascinating. I think it's really important for parents to know that, and maybe some of the shame sometimes will get in the way of this, but that you aren't alone. There are so many amazing resources out there. And if you can somehow build a team of people to help you while your kid is in a therapeutic program or not, that it is so important to have someone do a very good solid neuropsych on them, and somebody that can answer a lot of questions that you have and explain all of that to you. I think it's important to have a team that you can rely on, whether it's your own therapist, whether it's teachers that the kids have, anyone that you feel like you are not alone. I think it's really important to have a team of people, because I think this is a much lonelier path as a parent, and not to be afraid to ask for help and go out there and find the people that you feel like you can really be real with. I think that's really important.
You know, obviously, Meredith, you've been at this for a while. You've been in your work for years now. There are going to be parents listening to this who are brand new to these ideas, brand new to the challenges of a child who's struggling with mental illness or addiction. What would you say to that brand new parent to give them some perspective or hope as they begin this journey?
Well, Brené Brown has a great quote about hope, and that is that hope is not just you're going to wing it. Hope is based on a plan. And if that plan, I'm paraphrasing here, if that plan does not work out, then you change gears and you figure out a different plan. But it's being optimistic with the plan that you have and knowing that you have the flexibility within you to make another plan if that plan doesn't work. And it's just figuring out sort of choose your own adventure style, what's going to work for your child with whatever's going on with them. And so I think having hope and being proactive and being kind to yourself and just acknowledging that this is rough and being good to yourself and reaching out to people and getting support and getting help, I think is really important. And of course, I'm going to say, get yourself a really good therapist, because I think that it is the best investment that you can make in your life.
I agree with that. I couldn't agree more with you. Well, thank you. Like I said earlier, we are better off. The parents who are learning from you are better off because of the work that you've done and because of the passion and the message that you share. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I can't wait to see you all again when we get to travel again. And I miss seeing folks face to face. And I'm just really grateful for you to have joined us today and to share your story and your journey with our listeners.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.